You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. We get a chance to talk a little more football with a man who knows a thing or two about the rules. He used to be the head of officiating for the NFL. He's with us now. The one, the only, Dean Blandino is here. Dean, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing well. Hopefully everybody is healthy and safe with you and yours, wherever you're located currently, and we'll get back to the business of football soon. But some of these rule changes that are going to be proposed, I want to get your take on. We were talking earlier today about the fact that they nixed the idea of the sky judge before it even got in front of people to vote, and it's being portrayed by some as, oh, man, there's a lot of moving parts to this. They weren't ready. How difficult is it? Is it legit to say, man, there's just too much that goes into this? We're rushing this. What are your thoughts on the application of a sky judge at the NFL level?
Yeah, I'm not surprised that they pulled it, because I don't think that they're ready. I do think there's been time. As you think about last year during the March meetings, the sky judge concept, that was something the coaches talked about in at length. And they were 32-0 in favor of some kind of a concept. Ultimately, they went away from that and landed on pass interference review. We kind of saw how that played out. So I think, you know, obviously with what's going on in the world today, it's a unique time, and they felt like they didn't have, you know, the ability to get people together and start to teach and train. But again, I do think this is coming at some point. I think we'll probably have some kind of preseason experiment, but I do think at some point in the near future, you're going to see some form of a sky judge in the NFL.
Hey, Dean, I really appreciate that you were a stand-up comedian at one point, because having a sense of humor, I can't think of a job where you would need it more than being an official. Yeah. And I got a really quick story, because I have a lot of very fond memories of the officials in the NFL. I played middle linebacker. There's a guy, I don't know if you ever came across him, his name's Bob Wagner. He wore number 100. Yeah, and he was always, like, you know, right next to me. And sometimes I'd kind of have to push him back, you know, because he was in there. But, you know, I think everybody thinks that the officials are evil. And I always, as a player, just loved those guys. I had this interaction with him one time where I was screaming and yelling because I was getting held. Finally, there was like this little time, like a timeout, TV timeout, and he comes up and he's like, "Dave, so what's going on? What's the problem?" And I said, "Well, this guy's taking me down like a wrestler, man. It's ridiculous." And he's like, "Well, you know, I'll watch out for it." And I said, "Well, you better hurry up, because I'm starting to like it." And then he says to me, "Oh, come on, Dave, you're hurting me now." I mean, that was kind of the typical interaction of guys. I mean, I always felt like the officials were there. I do complain about officiating and some of the calls, but to me, it's more about the NFL loading too many rules on the officials, and not that they're doing the wrong thing, but it's more the NFL has just kind of overloaded them with too many things to watch. Do you feel that way ever?
I do. I agree. I think it's harder to officiate now than it's ever been. You think about the rules and how many rules we've added over the years. And not for, you know, a lot of these rules are player safety related, and that's important, certainly. But we've changed rules, we've added rules, and the scrutiny is so much greater today. And these officials, they're actually better than they've ever been. They're more prepared. There's more access to video. There's more access to technology. The fitness is better. All the diet, nutrition, all of the stuff we know today that we didn't know maybe 30 years ago. But the scrutiny is so much greater. And like you said, we have complicated things. And I remember Bill Parcells talking to him 2015 season. He called me just out of the blue, and we'd had some controversial calls, and it was more of just like a pep talk. And he just said, "Listen, you know, well, I told my players, reduce the variables and that'll improve performance." And we've got to do that with officiating. We've got to reduce some of these variables, and that will lead to greater consistency and better performance. And I'm happy that we're not changing a whole bunch of rules this year. It's a very small list. I think that's a positive.
Well, Dean, that pass interference rule that we saw this last year where they rarely – I mean, the coaches would challenge and they rarely overturned them. What happened with that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I have not – in my time, and I started with the NFL in 1994, never have I seen a rule change go in for 1 year that didn't get adopted permanently the next year or maybe a couple years after. And this was one where we went 180 degrees the other way. They were 31-1 for it, and now it's not even getting a second look. And it was just the way it was applied. The standard, it felt like in the first part of the season, it had to be, you know, so egregious to get overturned. And then it was kind of a moving target for part of the season. And it was just, there was never any consistency. And I think teams got fed up. And ultimately, the coaches and the people that matter, you know, about this rule, they said it's not worth it. It didn't work. It wasn't applied properly, and I think that was the problem.
Dean, what are your thoughts on the 4th and 15, you know, proposal that which initially it looked like it was going to be in place of the onside kick? Now we're getting clarification that you have a choice as a head coach. You can go for the onside kick or go for 4th and 15, which I can appreciate. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't hate it, but I'm more I do feel like this is a fundamental change to the game. And anytime we're going to make a fundamental change to the game, I want to make sure that we're vetting out all the potential consequences, unintended or otherwise. And I like the excitement of the onside kick. If you have a kicker that is skilled enough, you know, you look at a team like Atlanta, where they've got a kicker that is very good, you know, that's an advantage. 4th and 15, certainly, it's going to be an exciting play if this passes. So that's a positive. We do want opportunity for teams to come back when they're down. That creates, you know, exciting finishes and closer games. I just hope that, you know, if this does pass, we don't have a whole bunch of unintended consequences, and we're making it, like you said, now we're making it more difficult for the officials. Do we have, you know, penalty enforcement? What happens if there's fouls? You know, the clock, what's going to happen with the clock? There's things that would have to be worked out. So I like the game as it is. You know, I don't want to change just for change sake. So I like the onside kick, but I kind of get the reasons why they would want to look at this.
Hey, Dean, I think one of my biggest complaints, and this is, you know, played in the league for 9 years back in the 80s and 90s, and the game is so much faster now. And, you know, so one of the things that I feel like it's a penalty that's not necessarily correctable. Like, you can not hold, you know, and you can, you know, try anyway to not face mask, but the helmet-to-helmet hits, I mean, it just, at the last second, I mean, you know, everything happens in the blink of an eye, and I feel like, you know, there's not really that, a lot of times there's these situations where, you know, you just can't get your head out of the way, or sometimes the offensive player, you know, ducks his head. Tell me, is that one of the more difficult things to officiate, and what are your feelings on that? Am I off on this?
No, it is. It's certainly hard to officiate. I think it's hard because, like you said, especially as a defensive player, you could be doing everything right. Your technique could be exactly what you've been coached to do. It could be legal technique. It could be safe technique. And because at the last second, the receiver drops his head or the level changes, and now you end up with helmet-to-helmet contact, and that's a foul. And that's just, I think that's the collateral damage for the safety rules and trying to protect these players who are in that defenseless posture. I think if you, again, adding variables to that, if you ask the official, because it happens in full speed so quickly, if you said to the official, now you got to take the receiver and his body posture and did he dip his head at the last second into consideration, that would make it that much harder for the official to make that call. Whereas right now, it's a strict liability standard on the player initiating the contact that he has to do everything possible to avoid. And if, you know, circumstance creates helmet-to-helmet contact, it's still a foul. So there's no easy answer. Ultimately, it's player safety, and I think the league will live with some of those tough calls if the rule is doing what it's doing, which is protecting the players from that unnecessary risk.
Hey, Dean, what would you think about adopting the college rule for pass interference where it's just 15 yards no matter what?
Yeah, that's been discussed. You know, I've been part of the competition committee when we've discussed that. The biggest pushback, the biggest fear, and whether it's real or not, the one thing you always hear in those meetings when they talk about the college rule is they say the NFL defensive back is better than the college defensive back, right? They're more athletic. They're just a better player. And if you went with the 15 yards, that would severely hamper the deep pass, right? When you're beat and it's, you know, 40, 50 yards, you're going to take that penalty every time. You know, are you going to play more aggressively knowing that it's only 15? And would that hurt the deep passing game? I don't know if that's how it would play out, but that's what you hear in opposition to that rule. And I know that there probably isn't a lot of sentiment. It wasn't when I was at the league office, and I don't think it's changed in terms of sentiment or push to go to the college rule.
Okay, speaking of college football, and I might be putting you on the spot here, and I'll apologize before I even ask the question, but there's this perception that the Pac-12 officials are the worst in the country. Of all the different conferences, is that a misperception, or is it accurate, or something in between?
Yeah, it's probably, I would think if you ask fans, whatever conference they're in, they'd probably tell you their officials are the worst. I know that, and even in officiating circles, the Pac-12 has had that reputation that maybe they're officiating. There's no data. There's nothing to support that. That's just, sometimes officiating, you know, like we said earlier, it's a negative environment. I know the Pac-12, the resources that they have, the people that they have that are training their officials, they're top quality. And I think in general, college football officiating is getting better. I think the resources that they're putting behind it, people that they're using to train and teach, I think there's more consistency. It still has a ways to go. But, you know, I don't think the Pac-12 is significantly better or worse than any of the other conferences.
Dean Blandino is our guest here at Fox Sports, former head of officiating for the NFL. Dean, we've talked before about, you know, rules and challenges from coaches and things like that. And the one proposal that Bill Belichick has thrown out there that I actually agree with is coaches should be allowed to challenge whatever they want. They shouldn't get more opportunities. You should still get the same number. And then it puts the onus on them to really be judicious about how they're going to use their challenges. But what would be the argument against them letting, you know, to use their challenge on whatever they want? It's up to them. It's not going to, you know, extend the game. It's not going to delay the game anymore. You don't get more opportunities. So what would be the argument against that?
Yeah, you know, I've talked to Coach about that, and that's something that he's kind of been preaching that for a while now, and there's a simplicity to it. And I've, you know, initially it was like, no, that's crazy. And the more and more I thought about it, like, I think there is some merit to that because you're not adding the number of challenges. You're still tied to timeouts. So why not let the coach challenge whatever they want? But they have to understand that it would have to be clear and obvious in order to get overturned. And that was always Bill's point. Bill's like, I get it. It's my choice. I'll risk it. If you tell me there isn't enough to change it, then I got to live with that. And that's the pressure you put on the coach. So, you know, the cons to that is you say, okay, you know, is the coach going to, on any game-ending play, you know, we're down four and we throw the pick and the game, you know, they're going to be able to kneel down and end the game. Are you just going to challenge, you know, are you going to just challenge anything? It would have to be outside 2 minutes, but are you just going to say, you know, there's hands to the face and are we going to have a whole bunch of challenges that are really just fruitless, but it's desperation? Who knows if that would actually happen, but that's just one of the things that you worry about. Would coaches just always use it in that desperation situation, and then we're just delaying the game, delaying the inevitable?
Dean, I have a co-host here who, for some reason, wants to take away one of the few rules that actually benefits the defense when an idiot ball carrier fumbles into the end zone or into, you know, out of bounds in the end zone. He wants the offense to get it back. He has no respect for the end zone, obviously, if he's that stupid to fumble into the end zone, out of the back of the end zone, out of the side. Please tell me that one never changes.
I'm with you. I don't think that rule should change. I think the end zone is different. I think you should, your ball security, you know, should you sh- it should be at a premium. And I think that penalty should be severe. It's consistent with other loose balls that you put into your opponent's end zone, you know, kickoffs, punts, those are touchbacks. I know a lot of people feel the same way, that rule is too punitive. But to me, I don't think that rule is going to change. Certainly it'll come up every once in a while when you get a big play and everybody says that's too severe. But, you know, at least from my understanding, I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Okay, Dean, I'm the co-host. I don't get it. The defense did
it's
nothing
different,
to
Jim. You heard me.
Out of bounds.
We were talking about you. Wait. Is that who we were talking about?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. You heard what Dean said. It's different.
Excuse me for a second, Dean, while I talk to Dave. Dave, did I interrupt you while you were making your case? No, I did not. So let me continue. Dean, the defense didn't recover the damn ball. So why should they get the ball? I don't get it. Anywhere else on the field to play, let's say a guy fumbles it at the 17-yard line, the team that had the last possession gets the ball back at the 17-yard line. I just don't get that. If you want to penalize the offense, that's fine. Go ahead. But give the ball at the 10-yard line or the 20 or whatever. But not only are you giving the ball to the defense, you're giving it to them at the 20. Give it to them at the 1.
I get it, and that's the same argument you hear from people that don't like this rule. But the bottom line is, the end zone is different. It's not the 17-yard line. The end zone, when the offense breaks the plane of the goal line with possession, they get a touchdown. It's ball security is at a premium, and to me, it's just the end zone. You treat that different, and there's also, like I said, there's a consistency there with the other loose balls, and when we start to create exceptions, that's when the rules get more complicated. But I know we're never going to convince you. So like I tell my kids, my five-year-old, if he says why, I just say, cause I said so. And that's it.
Hey, but Dean, I'm 62, man.
Hey, Dean, as far as the safety of the game goes, a lot of these proposed rule changes, like the 4th and 15, like the potential elimination of the onside kick, it always gets chalked up to player safety. And I've asked the question repeatedly, specifically as it pertains to the onside kick, how many injuries were happening there? First of all, that's not a play that occurs very often at all. Second of all, I really don't remember seeing guys laying on the field after an onside kick attempt, you know, guy after guy limping off the field. It just didn't seem injuries were that prevalent during that kind of play. But have we gone too far? I'm not saying we shouldn't protect players. Of course, the more you learn about CTE and all these things, you got to take the right steps. But has it gone a little far to where it's changing what we're watching on the field?
Well, you know, I think player safety is always going to be, right, that's always going to be paramount. Look, this change, the onside alternative, this is not a player safety change. There's no data that supports, that says the 4th and 15 play is safer or less safe than the onside kick. It just, that data doesn't exist. And I'm sure the NFL is looking at it and trying to come up with something, but this is not a player safety driven change. This is an excitement, competitive, trying to get the game, you know, get closer finishes, and because the onside kick has become harder and harder to execute with some of the kickoff changes that we've made in recent years. I think, you know, where we are today, I don't think the NFL would ever say we've gone too far on player safety. They're going to continue to look at ways to protect the players from unnecessary risks, and you know, which they should. But you know, I don't know. I think the rules are in a good place right now, and you know, and as we learn more about these types of injuries and we see different types of trends, maybe we'll see more rules changes. But I don't anticipate a whole bunch of rule changes in the upcoming, you know, 4 or 5 years, because I think the league has done a really good job in that area.
Hey, Dean, most officials, it's a I don't want to call it a part-time job, but they have other things that they do. Is that correct?
Yeah. Most, okay. I would say, especially at the college level, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So what would be the argument against that? Why not make it a full-time year-round? Is it because the NFL doesn't want to pay? Or, you know, I mean, because you could be working out, you could be going through film, you could be doing all these things. What's the argument against making it a full-time job for these guys?
You know, I don't think there's a great argument against it. I think, you know, when you look at what officials do, they spend more time on officiating. Even if they have another job, they spend more time on officiating during the week than their other job. I've always, you know, when I was head of officiating, I said, I always feel bad for the other employer because, you know, my job is taking up a lot of their time. And, you know, I think, yes, there's merit to saying if you had full-time officials, they could be working out. They could be, you know, breaking down film. They're already doing that. I do think the league is going to hire a bunch of full-time officials. They're going to, the challenge is, okay, you know, what are they doing other than working football games? You think about other sports, right? Major League Baseball umpires, when they have an off day, they're not, you know, they're not at a practice somewhere. They're resting, but they just work more games because there are more games to work. Football is just, it's a once a week sport. I think the NFL will have more full-time officials. I think they'll get creative with the things that they can do. You can't send a bunch of officials to go work the Ravens practice every week because, you know, that creates, whether it's real or not, there's a perception that could create, you know, too much of a conflict of interest and some other things. So it's just getting creative with what they can do during the week. But I think we're going to see more full-time officials at the NFL.
Hey, Dean, you were involved with the XFL, and, boy, I really enjoyed the league. Are there any rules that you would like to see adopted from that league?
You know, yeah, the XFL was a great experience. I thought they did a nice job with the rules and trying some things. The kickoff was one that got a lot of positive feedback, and it looked different. But what it did, you know, you see the NFL and the NCAA, the majority of kickoffs are ending up in touchbacks, and the XFL, you know, 94% of kicks were returned, and it was a safer play, you know, small sample size, but we didn't have one concussion reported on a kick return because of where the players were lined up. So I think that would be a potential. I like that play. I like the 3-point play on the try. I thought that was a way to keep teams in games, and a 9-point game now is no longer a 2-score game. I think those were two. We didn't get to see overtime. I think the overtime was an interesting concept where the teams just alternate tries from the 5-yard line. There were a lot of really cool rules in that in the XFL, and it was unfortunate that we didn't get to see the rest of the season play out.
Dean Blandino of Fox Sports, an NCAA rules analyst, has been our guest here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. Dean, we always appreciate you taking out time with us. Always a great conversation. We appreciate it. Hope you stay safe out there, and we look forward to catching up again.
Sounds good, guys. You too.
There you go. Dean Blandino shedding a little light on some of the rule proposals and things that may change coming down the road. Meanwhile, Duane Brown spoke with the media today about the big changes to the Seahawks O-line and whether he's thought about retirement at all. We'll let you hear a bit of what he had to say coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
And don't forget, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. You can download it for free and take us with you wherever you go. If you're out in the sunshine today, walking around, you can listen to the show. You can listen to podcasts from there. You can text, all that good stuff. So if you don't have that, download it. Coming up in less than 15 minutes, Phil Mickelson's got a pretty good idea we'll go over. But Duane Brown spoke with the media today, hit on a few different topics, did a little Zoom session with the media. And he we'll go through a few different things they talked about. But one of the things we talked about, potential massive overhaul of this offensive line, potentially 4 new faces, 3 for sure. And we'll see if Yapati gets the start at left guard again. He could be replaced. We'll see what happens. But cut number 7, Duane Brown talked about, you know, offensive line and building chemistry and continuity.
Major factor is just chemistry, you know, and continuity. You know, we lost a big chunk of our starting pieces this past offseason. So over this offseason. So, you know, we got some new faces. We got some guys that have been in the system. We got some guys that haven't been there. So just getting to learn each other, you know, learning the terminology, communication, you know, just learning how we do everything here. All of that stuff is important.
So they're doing everything virtually right now, and they're just trying to learn terminology for all those guys that haven't been here, a lot of new faces. And one more quick one before we weigh in, cut number eight, just giving his impression of the new old linemen so far.
I think they're great, man. I think they're very excited to be here. I think they really want to be successful and compete and produce, you know. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, all those guys are different personalities, you know, which I love. They got, you know, a lot of experience, you know, play a lot of ball, and they're just, you know, they've been very just questioning a lot, you know, just kind of what to expect from the team, kind of what to expect, you know, in our division, things like that, you know. And so, you know, they've been great so far. You know, I'm looking forward to working with them.
Yeah, so far they've been great, although hasn't played next to any of them yet, hasn't been on a field with them yet, has no idea, you know, what communication will be like. And it's still early. He wouldn't know that anyway, even if we're in a normal setting without the pandemic. But early to give an evaluation of the young guys, but I guess personality-wise and talking to them virtually, it's going well.
Yeah. Well, and going back to the first cut, you know, I had that experience, well, not only with, you know, going to Denver, but also when we switched over from a 3-4 to a 4-3 in 1990. And, you know, and
still same principles.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that means, the 4-3 with 3-4 principles. But yeah, I think it's one of those things people say to make themselves sound important. But no, I'm sure if you asked a coach, they would explain it. But anyway, I just there's only so much you can do in football, and there's only so many ways that you can play offensive line, right? And the same with linebacker. And so once you get the terms down, I'll never forget when I went to Denver. You know, split backs, when there was two backs, you know, there's I, where they're lined up one behind the other. And then split was when they were, you know, one on one side and one on the other. And when I went to Denver, they're like, they called that orange. And then they called I green. And I'm like, why? Why don't you just call it that? Well, this is just the terminology we have. And so it didn't make sense. But you get over that stuff pretty quickly. I mean, that stuff gets absorbed. Now, you know, how another guy plays, that's a different story. And I think an offensive line, it's a lot, you're a lot tighter group. But I'll go back to, you know, the fact that I think they might have the best coach on the staff. I mean, I think Mike Solari might be like, and I don't, you know, I think they're all very good coaches. I just think Solari, from everything that I've heard about him, and so you look at his record and the things that he's done, you know, he's really a good teacher. I think he's almost more of a teacher than a coach.
Yeah, well, he's going to have a lot of work to do, especially this off season, with whenever they can get them all together, because, yeah, it's a hodgepodge of guys they got right now. You know, the thing is about Dwayne Brown, you appreciate him talking to the media today. He's your best offensive lineman, and he's going to be 35 years old in August. So I just wonder, he's going to be breaking down at some point. Maybe this will be the last year for him in Seattle. You're going to have to groom another starting left tackle here sooner or later. But you feel good about Brown, at least for one more season. You got Yapati next to him. But, yeah, I mean, with Britt gone, Fluker gone, Effetti gone, a lot of shakeup there. And hopefully it'll all come together. And I know having a guy like Dwayne Brown on that line as your leader, there's a good chance that it will come together.
That's a great segue, Jim, because cut number 10, Dwayne Brown was asked if he's given much thought to how long he's going to play.
Nah, I don't think about it too much. You know, I'm telling myself, you know, I don't want to put a number on, you know, when I want to walk away. You know, I'm enjoying it. You know, I'm just, this year my goal is to stay healthy as possible, play, be out there every Sunday, and that's all I'm really concerned with.
That's good. I mean, you look at him last year, I thought he played really well. You know, the year before, he's a guy who dealt with his very first year a high ankle sprain, and he battled through it. And anybody that went into that locker room after the game and saw him with a huge ice packs and limping around, you're like, man, this guy is really dealing with something, yet you didn't really notice it as much on the field. Last year, he looked good. So I know age-wise, the number-wise attached to him in terms of his age, looks like, all right, man, he could be fading here. But his play hasn't told me that. I don't know if you guys have seen something different from him, but He looked really good to me last year.
No, and that was pretty awesome and heroic when he stood up in Green Bay before the playoff game and said, "Guys, I'm playing." So, and, you know, he said he hadn't run on his knee until he ran out on the field. He hadn't tried it during the week, and he's just a super tough guy and really ridiculously strong. So I heard the other thing, too, and we heard this from Joe Thomas because I was just looking at Joe Thomas is 35 and Dwayne Brown is 34. We talked to Joe Thomas a little while ago, the Cleveland tackle who had like 10,300 straight snaps, and he said a lot about yoga, and that's what Dwayne Brown said, that he's doing – he's not doing so much of the like Olympic lifts, like power clean bench and squat. He's doing a lot of stretching. He said he stretches three times a day, and I'm listing all this just hoping that he is able to go, you know, another couple of years, because man, he's one of those, like, you don't want to have to worry about your left tackle. I always say there's three players that, you know, the kicker, you don't even want to have to talk about the kicker. He shouldn't even come up. Like, just make the kicks, okay? And we, you know, you can count on him. You know, the left tackle, really important for a right-handed quarterback. And then, you know, and having a really good cover corner, you know, that you can count on. I'm not sure if the Seahawks have that or not. I think they do with Shaquille Griffin. But, yeah, you want a good left tackle, and it's just one of those – it's almost like getting a quarterback. It's one of those positions you don't want to have to worry about. And when you don't have it, you don't have the right one, it can be a problem.
Yeah, it certainly can be. And Dwayne Brown, I hope you're right, Dave, because even though you look at it and you go, man, he's going to be 35 in August. He's getting near the end of his career. And then I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. Andrew Whitworth, the left tackle for the Rams, got a new deal at the age of 38 in March. So, wow. I mean, there's a chance maybe that Brown could play. It's a 3-year deal that the Rams gave him, but only the first year is basically guaranteed $12.5 million, so they can get out of it after 1 year. But still, he's still playing at 38, and if they thought enough of him to give him that kind of deal, Dwayne Brown is the equal of Whitworth, if not better, and he's 3 years younger, so maybe he could play till he's 38.
Good stuff. Yeah, hopefully he can, because he's a great guy in the locker room. The teammates love him, and he's a heck of a player out there. So let's hope he's got a few years left in him. Meanwhile, Phil Mickelson, fresh off of the match, the success of that, he's excited. He's got some ideas. We'll talk about him next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We talked a lot about the match. Took place over the weekend. It was just a massive success. The highest rated golf event in the history of cable television. Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. Everything about it was awesome. And apparently Phil Mickelson is so excited about the success of it, he'd like to see it become an annual event. He says, I think you could showcase guys like Steph Curry and Michael Jordan, or Tony Romo and Patrick Mahomes, who are all good golfers and have great personalities. He said those personalities are going to come out with this event, or you could have somebody who loves the game and is competitive but really entertaining, like Larry David and Bill Murray. He says, I think that could shine. And then he even suggested, he said, what if Tiger and I were to team up and take on two younger players? Or what if we were to team up with younger players and have it be a real high-level golf competition? I think there's a market for that. I like that he's excited about it. I love the idea of those two teaming up, only because they were always pitted as adversaries and having an adversarial relationship, which I think was true for a while. Clearly that softened, and the idea of those two playing together against, you know, I don't know, Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas or somebody, you know, some of the younger players could be fun. But the idea of that he's throwing out there about it becoming an annual event, I think that's pretty cool. I don't know if it would be as big as it was this weekend because of the circumstances. There's nothing else to compete with it. But I think it could be something they could market and really get people looking forward to each and every year.
Boy, it would be great for, you know, the guys who aren't the professional golfers. So, you know, the article you sent, Bob, talk about Steph Curry, maybe Michael Jordan. Oh, I mean, oh, that would be, I would love that. You know, Tony Romo, Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, it's not like Jordan needs any more, well, really none of these guys do any more exposure or anything. But they're all, you know, personalities. They're people you want to hear from and you want to see them. I think there's also an allure to seeing somebody kind of out of their element. You know, I'm sure Brady, I mean, he looked pretty nervous. Manning, you know, if he was nervous, he held it in pretty well. But I think seeing these athletes compete in a different sport was really cool. And it's just kind of a more of a casual thing. And, you know, I don't think anybody would be super fired up to see, you know, the golfers play basketball. But I think, you know, having football players, basketball players, whatever, people from other sports play golf, it's pretty nerve-wracking. I've been on the first tee a couple of times where there's more than like 10 or 12 people watching, and it's a high-pressure deal.
Yeah, I think you're right about Brady. He was clearly nervous, but you bring up golfers playing basketball, Dave. I wouldn't mind seeing that. I'd like to see some crossover athletes going into different sports. A game of horse with Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers or something like that. But the circumstances being what they are with the coronavirus knocking out all of the sports as we've known them in the past, and so it was one of those events where everybody stopped what they were doing and just paid attention for 4.5 hours to the TNT broadcast. I don't know how this would have gone over if it was during a normal Sunday afternoon, but there's some possibilities there. And things that I'd like to see on PGA Tour events and web.com tour, LPGA, the different, like Charles Barkley was suggesting, miking players up. I love the cart cams that they had, and just a lot that you can take away from that hopefully they'll apply to the regular golf events as well.
Jim, what do you think of the idea of bringing in non-athletes like Larry David, who would be hilarious? Bill Murray obviously is a massive golfer who's, you know, part of the, you know, Lake Tahoe celebrity golf tournament every single year. What do you think of that?
Well, I like it to a point. Yeah, Larry David, fine. Bill Murray, for me, I think has just gone too far out of his way trying to be funny. I don't know if other people feel that way. Maybe every time I see him at Pebble Beach now, I kind of go, okay, I've seen this act over and over and over again, and maybe I should have a better attitude about him. But, yeah, I mean, bring in people that just aren't professional golfers. I'd even like to see Barkley involved in this. And we all know about Barkley and the hitch that he has in his swing, the mental block that he has. But
He doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah.
He doesn't?
Did you see that hole he plays?
No.
I was going to watch. What did he do on the driving range? Did he actually have a nice swing?
No, they showed him he played the I can't remember which hole it was. Was it the 18th or whatever? But he was the idea was if he went bogey or better, he would, you know, make a certain amount of money for charity or whatever. So all he had to do was bogey the hole or better. He didn't do better than a bogey. I think he went double bogey on it. But his tee shot was not great. But he didn't have that goofy pause hitch that he used to have. So he teed off. It wasn't a great shot. And all of his other shots, I mean, he wasn't great, but he didn't have that really pronounced, like somebody yelled in the middle of his swing and he would kind of stop in mid-swing and then try to continue it. It was the oddest looking thing I'd ever seen. But yeah, that was gone.
Well, that's good to hear. The one time I was down in Tahoe and I was watching him on the range and he was right next to Michael Jordan when he was hitting shots, and that was back in when he had the hitch. We all saw that all the time. On the range, he didn't have the hitch. When it didn't matter, when the shot didn't matter, he could actually hit nice shots, but when it mattered, he couldn't. So that's good to hear. But I think part of, like Dave's talking about the allure of the event, part of it is seeing guys a different side of him. I mean, we've never seen Tom Brady on the golf course like that, and clearly he was trying to find his swing. And yeah, we can watch professional golfers all the time, but I think it's more fun to watch guys that are prominent in other fields out there on the golf course and looking like the rest of us with a golf club in their hands.
Well, as far as your thing about basketball court, Jim, how about Craig Stadler and John Daly out on the basketball court with Steph Curry and Michael Jordan? Is that what you're talking about there?
I don't,
the walrus.
I hadn't really thought. I hadn't really thought it through, but yeah, you know, I mean, if Daly, how about Daly against Stadler in a game of horse, and they had to be, you know, cocktailing the whole time, and I'm sure they wouldn't have any problem with that.
Yeah. What if they put Jonathan Papelbon and Philip Rivers in an MMA cage, or is that going too far?
No, that's not going too far.
Those are two punchable faces right there.
Yeah. No, it was it was very cool. I like that idea, and especially like I'm with you on Bill Murray, GM. He was funny for a while, but I felt like, you know, he goes a little bit too far. But you know, speaking of Caddyshack, the kid in that movie, Jim, if I'm not mistaken, I can't remember the name, the actor, but that kid had a great golf swing. Danny, the guy who played Danny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Was it something? Yeah, was it McKeon? What the heck was his name?
Yeah, somebody will text it in.
Yeah. Anyway, I can't remember his name, but you're right. He did have a good swing.
Michael O'Keefe.
Oh, Michael O'Keefe. Okay.
Yeah, there we
go. Good stuff.
But anyway, yeah, I liked go ahead, Bob.
I thought it was such a cool event. I don't know if it would. Again, in a normal situation where other sports are going on, maybe it doesn't draw the way this one did. But I still think it would be something cool that they could put together once a year. I really like the idea of Tiger and Phil teaming up, only because of what their relationship was, you know, purported to be years ago. And now it seems to have softened. It'd be kind of cool to see them take on two young golfers.
Yeah, who would that be? Who are the two best right now, Jim?
Well, it'd be fun to see him take on, let's see, Ricky Fowler. I mean, I know McIlroy's in his 30s now, but it'd be fun to see him go against him. There's any number of golfers that they could go against, but I still think that the crossover element is what made it work as well as it did, because there was another event with Matthew Wolf and Ricky Fowler against Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy, and I think people were starved to watch any kind of live sporting event the week before. And I don't think it played quite as well as this one did. So, you know, and the other thing, I mean, Justin Thomas, I watch him every week, and I don't see a guy that's as funny as he was on Sunday, and he was hilarious. He was really good. I look at Thomas, and I'm thinking, he just, you know, dresses just normal. He's a really good player, but there's nothing flashy about him. I didn't think he'd come across the way he did in that event, but he was one of the highlights of the whole day.
All right, coming up next, one of my all-time favorite segments on this show. It is What We Learned, and it's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
And that's why this is a powerful show. Knowledge is power, here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. So it's time to figure out what Jim said to, I mean, what did we learn today, DJ?
First, we learned if it comes between Brian Roland Smith and Jim's dog River, well, we learned who Jim would choose.
Okay, Ryan, I got to admit, I've been a little distracted here because I'm putting you over my dog who wants in and he's barking at the door right now, so I hope you appreciate that.
I'm getting to a dog. Wow, that's, I feel special. I need to the dog fight for our just... more.
He's about 30 feet away from me just going, hey, man, come on, I can see you. Let me in.
That was nice of you to choose our guest over River in the middle of a segment. We appreciate that, Jim.
Well, I just wasn't sure if the barking was, you know, audible for listeners there. And, yeah, I was kind of torn. But, yeah, I put my job ahead of my dog there, Bob.
You're amazing.
Aren't your kids around to go open the door?
Well, it's 30 feet away. The headphones won't go that far.
No, I'm saying your kids are in the house or your wife. Maybe somebody could just let them in, or are you the only one that has access to that door?
Kathy was out pressure washing, and the boys went on a run. So I was alone here.
Oh, that's good.
So it was up to you.
Yeah.
All right. What else did we learn, DJ?
Second here, we learned that Jim still looks for any opportunity to promote the golf show.
Wouldn't that be cool, though, if you were talking to a guy in the fairway from the booth and you just said, hey, John, You know, what are you thinking here? You know, what's going through your mind right here?
I could just, but that's where I'd see them going, no, I don't want to answer questions. I'm trying to focus. I could see them pushing back against that. But just being mic'd up could be feasible.
Jim likes it because there would be lots of clips for him to play during the golfing show.
And did you know, hey, Dave, since you brought it up, I wasn't going to bring it up, but we're going to have Chinks on Pants.
Oh, sure you weren't. Who do we have on? Who's coming on?
We cut that sound bite off. What the heck, DJ?
Sorry, Chinks on Pan. From, it was getting too long.
Yeah, Chinks on Pan.
Let's get to the promotion of it, yeah.
Yeah, he played golf at Washington. He won at Hilton Head 2 years ago, and he's going to join us on the golf show with Sean Crew, 9 o'clock Saturday morning, 7:10 ESPN Seattle.
Does he know that show reaches dozens of people?
We like to think it reaches dozens of thousands upon thousands of people, Dave. That's what we like to think.
Well, I'm looking at the podcast downloads right now, Jim, and I mean, it's doing pretty good.
How are they doing?
1.5K.
Yes.
For last week's show overall?
Yes, from Saturday, May 23rd. No, just...
All right. Yeah.
Well, it's just funny to me, like you always say, Bob, that whenever Jim has to lead the show, like I said, that's the only threat that's ever worked for me anyway on Jim is how do you like to, you know, run the show, pal? And yet you're just chatty as can be on the golf show on the weekends, and it's just very interesting to me.
I don't know why that is, Dave, but yeah. Do you ever listen?
Yes, I've heard the golfing show. I tune in to listen to Sean.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you. Bob, I know you're not listening because you're just sleeping away.
It's on way too early, Jim. I'm sorry. What else did we learn, DJ?
Well, we learned why the fumble out of the end zone rule won't change.
Dean, the defense didn't recover the damn ball. So why should they get the ball? I don't get it. Anywhere else on the field to play, let's say a guy fumbles it at the 17-yard line, the team that had the last possession gets the ball back at the 17-yard line. I just don't get that. If you want to penalize the offense, that's fine. Go ahead. But give the ball at the 10-yard line or the 20 or whatever.
I get it, and that's the same argument you hear from people that don't like this rule. But the bottom line is, the end zone is different. It's not the 17-yard line. So like I tell my kids, my 5-year-old, if he says why, I just say because I said so, and that's it.
Treating you like a 5-year-old, Jim.
You know what bothered me the most about that was he basically agreed with Dave that the end zone is a magical place.
Well, really, when you think about it, it's the only thing that benefits the defense. It's the only thing where you go, wow, that's actually a good deal for the defense. Everything else, you know, he's talking about the initiator of contact on the helmet-to-helmet thing. By the way, I love Dean Blandino. I like that he has a sense of humor, and he's what I remember those guys being. And actually, I think I'm going to do a story time on Friday about some of the interactions I had with the officials. But I complain, but I don't complain about them. I complain about what the NFL is trying to implement. But I thought he did a really good job of just, you know, like I said, you know, I think it helps to have a sense of humor doing that job because, you know, it's not very often that, you know, they're kind of like offensive linemen, right? You only notice them if they screw up.
Yeah, no, he's got a good temperament. He's got a good sense of humor, and he's informative. I like the guy. I like talking, and he's open to changing his mind. We talked about the idea of challenging anything you want as a head coach, like Belichick always talks about. And he said initially he wasn't into it, and then as time has moved on, he's like, you know, I see that it's pretty simple.
The only thing I don't agree with him on that magical place stuff he was talking about, but and then he stood up for the Pac-12 officials too, and I'm not so sure about that either.
You think they are the worst officials in college football?
Yes. I do.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I have to agree. Like, for a while there, the SEC was doing the targeting thing and throwing people out. But I saw some things like, remember the Colorado linebacker that got tossed in that game against Washington State, Jim, where, I mean, he just made a tackle. Yeah. So they've been kind of knee-jerk reaction in the Pac-12.
We learn anything else, DJ?
Nope, that is all that Jim said today.
Okay, well, he'll say more stuff tomorrow. I want to thank our guest today.
DJ's future isn't quite as bright as it used to be, by the way.
Jim needs to be nominated for an Above and Beyond award.
I've only gotten one in 10 years, Dave.
Hopefully DJ's future
That's
will
one
be
more than me.
Tomorrow.
Well, we need to step it up, Dave.
I've only got one as well, Jim. So we're all kind of in the same boat here.
Man.
All right. That does it for us. I want to thank our guests, Ryan Roland Smith, John Clayton, and Dean Blandino for joining us on the program. If you missed any of today's show, just head to the podcast page at 710sports.com. Click that podcast button, then scroll down and click on our picture. It's right there waiting for you each and every day. We're back tomorrow. Right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
I mean, sometimes I lack passion, but I do. I admit it.